excision number 11940, reel 1.
Brigadier P.J. Jeffries, reel 1. Where and when were you born, Brigadier Jeffries?
I was born in November 1909 in London. My father, at that time, a regular soldier in the Dynamite Infantry, was serving in the 1st Battalion in India. And my mother came home from India, and I was born in London.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother who was born 2.5 years later, just before the outbreak of the war.
You say your father was a regular soldier. Which regiment was he in?
My father was a regular soldier in the Durham Light Infantry. He served for about 30 years, retiring in 1927, starting his career shortly before the South African War, in which he served in the 1st Battalion of the Durham Light Infantry. He later became adjutant of the 6th Battalion and commanded it several times on and off continuously in the early part of the 1418 War. I think his last command of it was in 1916 or early 17. My upbringing was fairly normal, but we travelled round very much with my father in the various stations in which he served, but never far abroad, although after the First World War we were in Germany with him for quite a long time. After school, I went to Sandhurst.
Could I ask you which school you went to?
I was at Radley.
And were you in anything like the OTC? Was there an OTC at Radley?
Yes, I was a sergeant in the OTC. I remember that. I didn't much care for it. The only amusing thing I can remember was that I was an instructor in the Lewis gun. And we had an old sergeant employed to look after the OTC business, and he showed me how to take this gun to bits so that I could instruct. And I remember I took it back to my dormitory and I couldn't put it together again. I couldn't get it right, but I didn't dare tell him. And so for the whole of one term, I carried out my instruction with a Lewis gun without having put it together quite right. So that's the prelude to the sort of soldier I was going to be.
How did you take to the military discipline this time? Were you able to make
Well, of course, the first real military discipline I came up to, against was at Sandhurst. And Sandhurst, the discipline was very severe. I think some people might say that we were bullied a bit. But we were there for 18 months, three terms, and as a junior, which was your first term, you certainly were chased about. But I don't think it did us any harm. Otherwise, one had an enjoyable time, no doubt about that. And in fact, I wasn't very happy at school, but I was tremendously happy at Sandhurst.
When did you go to Sandhurst?
I went to Sandhurst in 1927. And I left and joined 1DLI in autumn 1929.
What kind of studies did you have to do at Sandhurst? What kind of studies did you have to do at Sandhurst?
I think the modern army would think our studies were inadequate. In fact, we studied military history fairly extensively and detailed. We studied topography. But I can't recollect that we studied very much more. I wouldn't think we did more than 1 hour's study each day for the whole time we were there. The rest of the time was drill, tactics, equitation, and so forth.
And you say the discipline was very strict.
Discipline was very strict. Very strict. And punishment, rather severe.
Do you recall any typical punishment that...
Yes. There used to be quite the normal punishment was pack drill. And the severity of pack drill depended very much on the NCO who was giving it. But the thing really was, you dressed in full marching order with a pack and a rifle. And you had to put your rifle for considerable periods above your head and double backwards and forwards. Well, of course, it depended. If you had a reasonable NCO in charge, it wasn't too severe. But if you had a blighter, you had a roughish time. I didn't have very many pack drills, but I had one or two.
Did you get... there was a sport in your leisure time?
Yes, I was a very keen cricketer. And I played for the Sandhurst side the whole of the time I was there. And I was there for 2 summer terms. My first term was a summer term, and my last term was a summer term. And strangely enough, you may think, as a junior, for the whole of that summer term, I played for the Sandhurst 11, and we played 2 matches every week, one on Wednesday and one on Saturday. And we started every day of those matches at 11:30. So although you've done a bit of work in the early morning and up till nearly midday, you had the whole of the afternoon of Wednesday and a bit of the morning and the whole of Saturday playing cricket. I played a tremendous lot of cricket while I was at Sandhurst. Loved it.
So you left Radley for Sandhurst.
Yes.
And of course you did your course of study then. And you came then to join the first DLI. Was that family influence?
Yes, undoubtedly. It was difficult to get the regiment of your choice. And it depended on the passing out place that you achieved at the end of your Sandhurst career. Mine wasn't very high. And so I think if I hadn't had a father who'd been in the regiment, I think I might not have got in. But I did get in, thank goodness. And I joined them in Egypt, in Alexandria. I didn't have a good start because I got polio almost immediately. And that polio affected me for the first year of my service, although I was determined to get it right. And I wouldn't go on sick leave. I said, no, if I can walk about, I want to learn my job in the battalion. And my colonel was marvellous. He said, "That's all right, if that's what you want, you stay. we'll not send you on sick leave, which you can have if you want a year's sick leave. No, you stay and learn. And of course, in that way, I think my spirit was uplifted and my determination strengthened. And my word, I beat it. And after a year, I was past fit. And on I went.
What year was it that you joined the regiment? Do you recall the year that you joined the regiment, the date?
Yes. I joined the regiment 19/9/29. I always remember that date.
What kind of reception did you get? You're just coming from Sandhurst to a regiment. What was the reception like?
Well, I was terrified, quite honestly. I thought, I can't think how I'll be treated. However, a great many of the officers, warrant officers, and some of the NCOs, had served with my father, and not very long before, because he had commanded the 2nd Battalion until 1927. So only 2 or 3 years before. And so I was treated very much, immediately I got there, very much as a member of the regimental family. I was treated marvellously and never had an unhappy moment.
What were your initial duties with the regiment?
I commanded 5 platoon. Directly I got there, I was given 5 platoon. And they were in a hushed barrack room, not comfortable. And we worked and trained quite hard, most of it individual training. And except for Thursdays. Thursday was a holiday. And the reason you had a holiday on Thursday throughout the British Army before the war, abroad, was twofold. One, that everybody could write home, and two, that the beds were taken out and the bugs, which always infected bedding abroad, were de-infested. So that was what went on Thursday morning. All the bedding was out, debugged, and chaps were told to bloody well write home. I don't know whether many of them did.
What kind of training were you involved in?
Well, mostly it was individual training. The most important thing in those days, those early days, was for a man to be proficient with his weapon. And the main weapon prior to the war was the rifle. The short magazine Lee Enfield 303, a wonderful weapon, a marvellous weapon, terribly accurate, very easy to maintain, and putting a bullet with decent accuracy up to 800 or 1,000 yards. And that was the most important thing that we did. Of course, we've trained with the Lewis gun, which was the light automatic in those days. There were no mortars. And not until a little bit later than that did a battalion have medium machine guns. So that's what you did. Of course, we had section and platoon tactical training, but the main thing was proficiency with a rifle and bayonet. And a man was desperately badly paid. I think when I joined, he got £0.01 a day. And from that were taken about tuppence or threepence stoppages. Stoppages, most unjustified. Stoppages were used to give him a bit more food, towards sports equipment and so on. Nothing like that would happen nowadays, but that was what happened in those days. So a man got very little. But he also got proficiency pay above his one and a penny. And his proficiency pay was educational and weapon. If he got a third class certificate of education, he got a penny a day proficiency pay. And if he was a first or second class shot at his annual classification, he got another penny. I think I'm right in the amounts. Another penny proficiency pay. So it was terribly important to get him a third-class certificate of education and make quite sure that he was a first- or second-class shot. So those were honestly the things that one really slogged at. You have to remember also that the clothing and equipment in those pre-war days was not easy to maintain like modern clothing is. And it was very important that a man kept his clothing and his equipment, as well as his weapon, in first-class order. And so it took a good deal of time of his daytime to do that. And, of course, being an enthusiastic and proficient sporting regiment, a large part of the later part of the day was spent in football, athletics, and so forth, cricket as well.
What could you take me through a typical day with the regiment and with your platoon out there that time,
yes,
from the time of getting up in the morning?
Yes. Reveille was always sounded by bugle. Of course, nothing like would go on like that now. But I remember Reveille being sounded. And Reveille sounded, I think, at 5:30 or 6. And the men tumbled out of bed immediately. Had a wash and a shave. And first parade was always PT. So at 6:30, PT. Everybody was there. And you had PT. Not much to describe about PT. It's always been desperately difficult to make it amusing. But anyway, for 30 minutes, we did PT. And then fell out and breakfast. And, of course, immediately after breakfast, everybody had to get their cot straight. Now, I know there's an awful lot of grousing, or supposed to be grousing, about cot and kit inspection. But I don't think they were resented at all. They were vital, because you had to clean up the room, you had to get blankets and bedding folded up and ready so that it could be used after work, and all the kit ready, rifles cleaned and got ready. So I wouldn't think the first parade started before 9 o'clock. Might have been 8:30, 9 o'clock. And that entailed inspection of the room and the man, to see that he's clean, shaven, haircut, and that his cot was well put up. And then, as soon as that was over, then we'd start on weapon training, signalling, small tactical exercises on a section and a platoon basis, and that would see the morning pretty well through. If you had three periods, each of 3/4 hour, I think we had a break in the middle of the morning for what were called cha and wads, which was tea and buns, which the wretched soldier had to pay for, buy in the canteen. But Chan Wads went on in the middle of the day. After the morning parades, there were dinners. I remember dinners in Alexandria. Hardly believable now. But the cookhouse was quite a long way from the dining rooms. And each man had to go to the cookhouse with his plate, mess tin, and mug. And there he picked up his stew, his bread and butter, and his mug of tea. And he carried it back to the dining room, where he sat down and ate it. And on the way from the dining from the cookhouse to the dining room, he would be bombed by shawks. The shawk is is a hawk. It's a kite hawk. We always call it a shite hawk, and it lives on offal. And in those days, Alexandria, Egypt, and the whole of India had large numbers of shawks. And the shawks were always either in the native bazaars doing the same thing or round the barracks. And quite often, a man going along with his meat on a plate, a shawk would come and seize a lump of it. I always remember that.
During the afternoon, what was the afternoon period?
The afternoon, I suppose the first hour after dinners would be spent in a bit of cleaning up of the equipment and so forth that had been used in the morning. And then there would probably be 1 hour of something rather less energetic than the morning had been. Particularly, of course, this education business. And I remember as a platoon commander, commanding 5 platoon, I was told by my company commander, a chap called Jock Hasted, wonderful chap, and Jock said, in your platoon, there are 8 men who've not got their third class certificate of education. In 4 months' time, you will make quite sure that they get it. So I would do a good deal of teaching my 10 men who hadn't got it.
What subjects did they take for this certificate?
Practically nothing. Reading, writing, arithmetic. Finished. They've got to be able to read. And my word, there were a lot of chaps who came into the army who couldn't read. And of course they couldn't write. But you taught them to read, write, and do addition, subtraction, division. Not long division, that was beyond us.
And what did you use? Did you have books to help you in any way? Or?
Yes, you had books. And of course we had an educational staff. You had I don't know if that branch is still in the army, but it was the Army Educational Corps. And we had a warrant officer in part of the battalion establishment, Army Educational Officer. He was always a good cricketer, as a matter of fact, apart from anything else. But he organized the programs. He gave you the papers from which you could teach. But, of course, it was not difficult teaching. Really, all you've got to do was to get the enthusiasm of the soldier and brush up his intelligence a bit and practice him in reading and writing and arithmetic. I was very bad at maths anyhow.
So this would bring you through to what, to tea time?
No, it would hardly take us through till tea time. Although, if I remember right, tea was not much of a meal. The soldier got damn little at tea time. Just got a a mug of tea, I think, practically nothing else. But sometimes he'd be playing football before tea, but always afterwards. The late afternoon and the evening was devoted to whatever sports you wanted. But football, athletics, cricket were the three which occupied that late part of the day. And then he had supper. And again, I always thought that the soldier in those pre-war days was dreadfully badly fed. He didn't get enough, and what he did get was of poor quality. And how he managed to exist and be fit, I really don't know.
Did the food come from local contractors?
The food came from local contractors, that's right. The Royal Army Service Corps provided it, and as orderly officer, if you were the orderly officer, which you did every day, there was one subaltern did orderly officer, and the first job for the orderly officer was to go to what was called the ration stand, and at the ration stand arrived the food for the day, or for the next 24 hours. It was brought there by the RASC, who supplied it. The quartermaster was there, or the regimental quartermaster sergeant. And the food was divided up and issued to the companies. The companies had come along with their company quartermaster sergeant and a ration party of four or five men. And the rations then were picked up and taken back to the company cookhouse.
Did you have much trouble with food that had gone bad before it even got to the company you received it in bad condition?
I don't remember it, so... I don't think it did go bad. You had an issue of ice at the same time, great blocks of ice, which were used to keep it in reasonable shape. And of course, if meat goes off a little, you slash it into a stew, you know.
So after supper, what was left of the time before lights out?
Oh, chat. They were allowed to go out into the town, but they had to be back by lights out. They had to be back by last post. That's right. They had to be back by last post. And they had to go out in uniform, no plain clothes, and they'd be inspected at the guardroom on the way out, and probably inspected, or they had to report to the guardroom on the way back, and go back to company and to bed. But the evening was pretty dull.